precious few. It's like they want to say, man, what's happened to you? I got aches and pains where I didn't used to. And I kind of hope they've got them too. Direct. Too uptight to really connect. Scared to see our own reflection. Caught in the jaws of life. Such a burned out crowd. Somebody said, boy, don't be thinking out loud. 'Cause you know some of us were once so proud. Just like you, we had our days. Just a few more mortal souls in the jaws of life. Caught in the jaws of life. Found ourselves chewed up like everyone else. Made no difference what we thought. To who we were, we still got caught in the jaws of life. 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 Done some good and I've done some wrong. Done some things I can tell you, son. That if I'd known better, I'd never have done. Still, I search for something I can't see.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker. Right here on May the 31st, the very last day to do it in May, Saturn's Day. There you go. And it's a beautiful day here in Indiana, north central Indiana. Absolutely gorgeous. Everybody's out and running around and playing and garage sailing and farmer's market and all that kind of good stuff today. Well, you people that are sending in your donations for June, thank you. We got quite a few in here already. We appreciate the donations, extra donations for some of the deserving prisoners also. Yes. Like I said before, I got this deal where I'm getting all these magazines. You know, you get a whole year for $2. It's some kind of a deal. It has to do with the last time I flew on an airplane or something. So I've got these magazines coming in here. I'm getting a New York Times every day now. I can't keep up with that stuff. Anyhow, we've got all these magazines to give out to people or whatever. And we've got some new stuff up on the website, resist.com. I put a special place up there for the, what the hell's his name? I can't remember anything anymore. Oh, yeah, the Rogue Progressive. That's Mike Malloy up there. He probably craps his pants when he knows I'm running his stuff. But on the other hand, I don't say anything really bad about him, so I don't see why he should be upset. And he does dig up some great stuff. When it gets to the race issue, well, we just look the other way on that. Like we have to do on a lot of things. Because we used to be in that right-wing trap, probably you and I both. And we'd say, oh, well, if it's Republican and right-wing conservative, it's got to be good. Well, we finally learned that's a bunch of bullshit, because as the corporations took over, they married into the Republican Party, a real incestuous marriage, where now the corporations and banking institutions are so powerful, they're controlling the government. So if we're going to get any help at all, in some form, it's got to come from some area of government, unless we just rise up, man. I tell you. Now, for instance, and you can't say right or left anymore, because it's all mixed up. You just have to go where you find it, you know, hunting and gathering. Now, look, Michelle Obama. Now, you know, the right wing immediately say, oh, she's an ugly old black broad, and she shouldn't be in the White House and all that. But on the other hand, now, she came out and pushed this healthy diets in schools program. Now, we can't come out and say, oh, well, that's horribly wrong, like the Republicans, they do. Because that was right. You know, instead of all this crap, sugary stuff that they're feeding kids in school, they're getting a decent deal now. But the Republicans are trying to get rid of healthy food in the schools. There's one Republican congressman down there in Georgia who's pushing legislation to go back to the old way, which favors the big corporation sugary food game. And you know what a game that is. It's ruining the health of the country, ruining the health of the country. And so you can't just be straight down the line on this stuff anymore. You know, and I've changed my mind on this global warming. When I followed the money and saw all of the guys and the corporations and the rich billionaires that were fighting global warming programs, protection from global warming, and cleaning up the coal-fired generators. When I saw all those guys spending millions and millions of dollars, like the Koch brothers and these people, I said, come on, Tom. If they got that many billionaires on the other side going against scientific evidence on global warming, I think they're lying through their teeth, and they don't give a shit. In fact, I think they'll ride this thing right down into the ground. That's what I'm worried about, that they won't do anything. So they're trying to get some restrictions on these coal fire generating plants. And all the Republicans can come up with is it's going to cost the people too much money. Well, yes, but you're killing your environment. You're killing your environment. You may just have to cut down on your usage. You know, do you ever think of that? We have to, I know I do. I should cut down on my usage. But these are the things that we got to look into because, you know, 50 years ago, the corporations weren't as in control, not near as powerful, not near as able to push the government around, to where the government had some teeth that once in a while they could do something good. So that leaves us in a interesting situation here. We have to go to the left, we have to go to the right, we have to go wherever we have to go for ideas and suggestions on how to save ourselves in the white race. You can either say, like the old right wing, well, Michelle Obama's a big black mirror. We don't want to use any of her ideas and let your kids eat crap food. Or you can say, well, that was a good idea. If be honest about it. So we need healthy food for the kids in school. So anyhow, that's what I'm thinking about today.
Message there, Tom. Too bad it was cut short a little. But, you know, it's just too bad these a lot of these veterans, well, I mean, you know, most of them are white, of course, white Southern boys. These veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. Whenever there's a war, all the spicks and niggers in the military just disappear like smoke. But, you know, when it's time for the fighting to begin, it's just the white Southern boys doing all the heavy lifting, so to speak. But, you know, if these guys had any brains, which unfortunately they don't, they'd realize that their government lied to them, that they've been used, they've been humiliated, they were sent over to these countries to fight unnecessary wars based on lies. You know, they were over there fighting for the Jews and the banks and the military-industrial war machine to make the politicians look good. And they've been, you know, thoroughly humiliated, the way I see it. They've been thoroughly used and abused and exploited. But, you know, they come back here and so many of them are angry, bitter. They have a lot of smoldering rage. And instead of directing it at the government or the media or the politicians, you know, the people responsible for sending them over there to ruin their lives, they take it out on themselves. They take it out on their families. They become prison guards, security guards, cops. They beat up, you know, they start knocking around suspects that don't deserve it. So it's a lot of, I suspect, there's a lot of misdirected rage and anger inside the heads of these Iraqi and Afghan war veterans. And like I say, most of them, the overwhelming majority of them seem to be white and from the South and from working class, lower middle class backgrounds, right? Not too many affirmative action Negroes, spickos, fairies, you know, none of that shit. It's just the usual white, Southern, working class, lower middle class cannon fodder. So thanks for your message. A lot to think about as usual, and look forward to the next one. Goodbye.
Well, I couldn't say it any better myself, buddy. And I know there's plenty of other people out there agree 100% with you. But remember one thing. These politicians are not doing it for politicians necessarily sake, except their personal sake to get reelected. They are working directly for the big corporations now. There's no way they can raise enough money to run in the rat race unless they suck on the tit of the big corporations. Now, we just had this big buyout here in Warsaw of Zimmer Splint Manufacturing Company and another company they bought. And New York Jews are going crazy about they're going to make all kinds of money. Well, one of the reasons why these companies are so profitable is because they're making all the artificial arms and legs and everything for guys in Iraq and in Afghanistan and so forth. I mean, there's thousands of guys that are getting their legs blown off, arms blown off, feet blown off, everything else. And there's not that big a market with the domestic crowd. I'm going to get the information on that, but I'll bet you the increase has been at least a third in the profits of these splint factories, like right here in Warsaw, because of these wars. So if you got any information on that, give it to me too. I'll be writing some letters to the local paper. This is a real hot potato. They'll print most of my letters, but boy, attacking the big corporation? We'll see. Now, I'm going to send you a couple of pages of writings from Gregor Strasser, the original National Socialist in Germany. And even though there may be some things that need to be brought up to date a little bit, it's pretty damn close to the truth as I can see it. And this is before National Socialism began to be turned into National Capitalism. And I think that if we move towards this type of an idea, we're going to be pretty straight on. I'm going to send this to you, so you'll get it on email. Okay, one of our lone wolves sent us the address of a website that he says, this website, along with the Drudge Report, are maybe two of the best websites out there next to yours, of course. You can look at this website and say it's the usual black-on-white crime madness repetitiveness. But if you read this site on a daily basis, like I have for the past 4 or 5 years, you will find that the person who runs this site is very intelligent and quite detailed in his reporting of how whites have given away our entire birthright to these niggers. He uses historical antidotes brilliantly. Of course, so have you. I'm not comparing him to you, of course. Although, like Drudge, sometimes he seems to be far right, and he does attack liberals. So, well, anyhow, I'll send this along to everybody, and they can check it out and see if there's anything there we can use or not use, okay? Well, this announcement takes me back a little bit. Arsenio Hall, that big black guy, had a show, really big show back in the 70s, I guess, and maybe the 80s. And he had a comedian on there. I think I told you guys this story before. He had a comedian on there that actually made fun of the fact that I wore a hairpiece, and I did back then, which I wish I'd have never done. But that's all behind me now. So anyhow, I watched that show, or somebody turned me on to it, and I took that hairpiece and put it in a box, put it in nice cotton around it and everything, and I sent it to Arsenio Hall. And I put a note in there. I said, Arsenio, since you're so interested in my hairpiece, I figured you needed one to keep you warm and fuzzy at night, and sent it to him. I never heard anything about it, but I bet there was a whole lot of laughter because I said, I don't need this damn thing anymore. This is ridiculous. Well, anyhow, he tried to make a comeback. CBS Television Distribution is reporting that the Arsenio Hall show has been canceled after just one season. The show debuted last November, and news of the show's cancellation comes as a shock. And because they were talking about great things that were coming. Well, too bad, Arsenio. I'm still here, and you're gone. Well, the blacks are beating the reparations drum again. And that's okay. Even though they've gotten a hell of a lot of good out of this country, including millions of jobs from white people. But I think it was on April the 19th they had a big gathering of all these black leaders, and they were going on and on how they got to get reparations. And I remember when there was one preacher out, black preacher in California, that was going around to the conservative Republicans preaching that stuff. You got to help us get reparations. And really, one he wanted to get a percentage of the reparations is what he wanted. But in 2 weeks since the Atlantic magazine published the Ta-Nehisi Coates front page story entitled The Case for Reparations, and this thing was so long, man, I tell you, this was like a book. People all over the country have engaged in the national conversation about racism and slavery and its impact on black people. I wonder about mulatto people. A recent article published by the Atlanta Black Star refers to the piece as one of the most powerful logical cases for reparations ode to African Americans that has ever been put to paper. Well, the blacks are following the same footsteps as the Jews. Jews got away with it. Now the Negroes want to get away with it. They've been pushing at it for a long time. And whites are so stupid, they'll probably fall into it. The 17-page article, which I told you is like a small book, attempts to approach the case for reparations for state-sanctioned slavery and segregation through geographical and governmental policies from a slightly different vantage point. Coates frames reparations not just as a financial debt, but also as an emotional and psychological one that must be remedied in order for America to begin to heal as a country. Can you imagine with the economy the way it is, they're wanting to get reparations too? But I've said, and I've been quoted in the press, I will go along with reparations for the blacks. And this is how I'll go along with it. First of all, they go after the ruling class, the rich whites, and get all that big bundle of money. And then we're going to be standing at the bank door to get reparations for all the white working people that have been screwed because of low wages and scabs of the black race. And all the special programs for blacks that aced whites out. And all the industrial jobs of the old days in the 30s and 40s and 50s and so forth that were taken up by blacks because the corporations wanted cheap labor. We'll take our money out of that, and you're not going to have much left, Mr. Black Man. Now, last night they had it was a replay of a get-together with several black dignitaries, black intellectuals, and Louis Farrakhan was on there. He gives a hell of a speech. He's a very violent man. He was even talking about Winnie Mandela and her necklacing. Remember that? How soon people forget. They were down there during their squabble in South Africa. They were putting flaming tires around the necks of people they didn't like. Winnie Mandela was involved in that. Probably mostly the Zulus who were opposed to the Mandela faction. But he was talking about that, and he was very close to telling the blacks to go down, out and burn down a town. And fine, if you want to try to do that, Mr. Farrakhan, you tell your people to come streaming out of the ghetto and burning things down, and we'll see what happens. But they were really beating their chest for reparations. Really. I got a little of it. If I could find it here, I'll play it for you. But everybody wants money that whitey, the working class, has worked so hard to amass for the ruling class. And it's time for the ruling class to lose some of that money and go ahead, give a few billion dollars to the blacks. We're going to be right in line for the white working class to get our share, and it'll probably be all you're going to get. I think it'll be good that they push this because, I mean, you know, let's face it, a hell of a lot of white people out there are getting pretty well tired of the whole mess. They are getting a little tired of the whole mess. And now that they don't have jobs and they don't have houses, and now the blacks want to have reparations, I think they're going to run into a little problem. I think it's good propaganda for our side. You know, one of the holding companies that is involved in this deal with our local splint factory, Zimmer's, is the Blackstone Group. They've come out of nowhere, as far as I know, and they're going around the country buying up as many rental properties as they can buy, thousands and thousands of rental property. Well, you see, the game is that they not only control the sales of houses by artificially keeping the prices of the houses up, which they shouldn't be really as high as they are. But at the same time, they buy up all the rental property and raise the rents throughout the country. So, I owe my stove to the company store, man. You can find more of this silly reparations argument at a place called Culture Critic. That's with a K. K-U-L-T-U-R-E. Critic. KRITIC.com. And along with that, you'll see the comments by white people about this situation. It's quite interesting. Well, you know, most people, most white people, it's easy to confuse them because the political parties have kept them confused for ages. Especially the Republican Party has kept the white people confused ever since they adopted that phony Southern strategy, which was simply political, had nothing really to do with saving the white race, which a lot of people keep thinking that Ronald Reagan and those guys adapted the Southern strategy for the best interests of the white working people. Did you know that Obama has deported 2 million illegal aliens? Do you hear the Republicans talking about that? That supposedly they were for getting rid of a lot of illegal aliens, stopping the influx of illegal aliens from Mexico and Central America, but it's Obama who deported 2 million. 2 million, that's a lot of people. Now, do you think that benefited the working class in this country? I'd say with 2 million people less in the workforce, because most of those people were working at something, that it helps the workforce. And it helps black workers, you know, quite a bit there too, you see. Now, here's an article. I said that the Republican Party is going to end up being the best friend of the blacks and even the Mexicans in the long run, because they don't give a shit as long as they make money, profit. This is by Dr. Sinclair Gray, the third. Why black men need more white women. Just the title of this article is bound to leave many people feeling uneasy and uncomfortable, along with the many struggles brothers face in African-American community. To state that black men need more white women is a sentence to be excommunicated from the African-American community. William Julius Wilson, a noted sociologist, has argued, quote, "The increasing levels of non-marriage in female-headed households is a manifestation of the high levels of economic dislocation experienced by lower-class black men in recent decades," unquote. He further argues, quote, "When joblessness is combined with the high rates of incarceration and premature mortality among black men, it becomes clear that there are fewer marriageable black men relative to black women who are able to provide the economic support needed to sustain a family," unquote. With many negative comments made about black men, it was concluded that black men need white women like Ann Coulter and Laura Ingraham, both right-wing Republican conservatives. It's believed that women such as these, who are, by the way, are conservatives to the core, do more to elevate black males than black women in general. In one of her many interviews with George Stephanopoulos, Coulter looked at civil rights as being for blacks. Comparing civil rights to the rights of immigrants is wrong and inaccurate because blacks were forced from their land and are owed something. In fact, history informs us that Republicans used to stand up for blacks, but if you read the Marco Rubio's amnesty bill, you will think differently. Now, this is in a black magazine, you got to understand. According to an article in Black Press USA, noted author and columnist Raynard Jackson said, quote, "The Democrats have failed the black youth in the country with their terrible economic approach." Well, was that planned? Was psychologically racist down deep among the Democrat Party? Do we call that racist? They turn their heads away from the millions upon millions of black babies slaughtered in the womb over the 10 years. Well, because Democrats support abortion more than Republicans. Is that racist? Is it racist that they allow inner cities to continue to crumble as families decay across the board in America? especially hard hit is African-American families. Well, you see all these cities that are Democrat-controlled are allowing the cities to crumble. And that, what's going to happen in Detroit with everything crumbling to pieces? The Republicans and their fat cat billionaires are going to come back in, rezone, rebuild, and make a lot of money. And meanwhile, a large black population's hitchhiking around the country. So who is the real friend, the big buddy of blacks? It sounds to me like it's the Republicans. It is reprehensible, and it's all about November. This is not about they care about black people. They care about their majority eroding away. And I think they mean the upper middle class or the very rich ruling class. So let me make sure I understand. Black women complain about the state of eligible black males to date and marry, yet they support the policies of a president who's going to make the problem much worse. This reminds me of a gal who wrote a book. She's from Chicago. I've got the book in my library here someplace, but I didn't take time to find it. She wrote a book, it wasn't a big thick book, maybe 150 pages, way back in the 80s, about how she had to go to funerals, to meet black men. There's so few black men to meet. And she was onto this a long time ago. So she had to go to a funeral, black funeral, to find black men. And I talked to her, or communicated with her. I talked to her once by mail and once on the telephone. Nice lady. On another issue, it would seem as though President Obama has done more for same-sex married couples than he's done for same-sex, same-race brothers and sisters. Just look at the unemployment rate for black men. Obama has done more to promote same-sex marriage and creating amnesty for illegal immigrants. Think about it for a minute. When illegal immigrants are granted amnesty, unemployment within the black community, especially among black men, will increase. And, of course, white men, too. And just look at homosexuality within the African-American community. Many women are finding it difficult to seek eligible men to marry. Too many faggots. No black woman is going to marry a brother who is unemployed or underemployed. In the past, black women have protected their men, and now they're trashing them. White women like Coulter and Ingram are speaking up for black men. It looks like black men do need more black women. Well, anyhow, that's an interesting article there from a black point of view. Well, here's a sweet crime that you can read about. Father who threw his daughter in a river says she's in a better place now. Well, why didn't he jump in the river? He'd be in a better place. A New Jersey black man who threw his daughter in a river while she was still strapped in her car seat admits that he is sorry for the breakup with the girl's mother, but did not apologize for murdering his own child. Arthur Morgan III was sentenced to life in prison on Wednesday for tossing his daughter into the river in her car seat. Another victim of crazy blacks and religion.
Going to be in a better place, man. Splash.
Well, this new documentary that unfortunately I was a part of, and I swore I wouldn't do anymore, because they come to me and want to do an interview, and that's fine. Not only do they chop the interview all up, but then they go to all the yahoos in the right wing around the country, including the Kluxers and the Hollywood Nazis, to interview them and then throw my short interview in with those people. Mo Esamang's new documentary, The Aryans, finds the filmmaker challenging racism head-on as she travels the globe to confront the world's most notorious racists face-to-face and ask them politely about their prejudice. Yes, she was very polite to me, until she got to the cutting room. Esamang, a daughter of a white German mother and a black Ghanaian father, and a well-known television personality in Germany, has been target of an extreme racism herself and decided to examine racial ideology at its source. In the documentary, Aryans, the Assamang, that travels to Germany to talk to neo-Nazis, to America to have a conversation with a member of the Ku Klux Klan and to an area of Iran where true Aryans originated as people. Quote, these people don't actually talk to Jews, unquote, says Assamang in an interview with BBC. Well, I talk to Jews. Any Jew that wants to talk to me, just say, hi, Mr. Metzger, I want to talk to you. As long as they're reasonably polite, I'll talk to anybody. Then she says, quote, they don't talk to black people. Well, I talk to black people probably at least once a week. There are not many of them around here. But when I was in California, you know, business dealings, everything else, of course I talk to blacks. See, this is how dumb she is. They don't know their enemy, so-called enemy. So what they do when they talk to me, they talk reality. And that's the first thing they have to survive. The BBC video shows Assamang confronting neo-Nazi demonstrators who tell her to go back to Africa, to which she replies, why would I go back to Africa? I was born here. Doesn't make any difference. Your genes and your blood are African. More African than white because you were pretty black. She confronts a KKK member who claims that he's not racist, and she calmly informs him that to her, his outfit represents hundreds of years of hate and terror. Sitting on a park bench on a sunny day, she has a friendly conversation with a conservative man who tries to explain the biracial filmmaker why race mixing is a bad thing. You know, most of this is, the trouble is, I think everybody in this documentary but me is a right winger. And you get Klansmen who'll say they're not, will tell her they're not racist. Stupid stuff. Because most of the right wing and even the racial proponent or component of the right wing are stupid people. I'm sorry, but I've been involved in this thing a long time and I've gone through hundreds, maybe thousands of people. And I'm telling you, most of the people that hang into the Klan and the Hollywood Nazis are stupid. And they can say what they want about me, that's okay. But at the end of the meeting, when it's time to part, he offers her a hug. I hope nobody sees a picture of that. I'll be through, the man says. Well, she came up to me and hugged me before she left. I didn't think anything about it. That doesn't mean anything to me. Quote, I think it's totally confuses them because I'm not like what they want me to be. But she acts like she's the only black person that is a professional and acts in a professional way. Quote, so I stand there, maybe I smile at them, and because it's human reaction, you want to smile back. Well, of course, what's the problem here? So I see them trying to hold down the smile, and that's something very, very interesting. Well, you see, that's the right wing. I have no problem smiling to a black person if they're not trying to kill me or something, you know. Assamang's The Aryans, a documentary about confronting racism, might be less about confrontation and conflict and more about how racism has a hard time holding its ground in the face of genuine human connection. And one of our supporters says, one of our lone wolves says, this is why I don't think real racists should ever participate in projects like this. They are never beneficial to us and are set up from the very beginning to make us look bad and sound like idiots. You're exactly right, and I declared to my friends, I'm not going to do any more. I've done quite a few documentaries over the years. None of them have really promoted us properly. Most of them have taken hours of footage and cut it up and find the footage that they can try to make us look dumb and so forth. And then they throw me in with what I have to say with the right wing, the conservative right wing. And that's not where I am at. Anyhow, it's going to be making the rounds, and I haven't seen it yet. I saw a couple of short clips. I'll send you this information by email. However, I must say that after each one of these documentaries makes the rounds, and even years after they float around on the internet, I still get legitimate, intelligent people who contact me and ask me more questions and want to get involved and want me to point them in the right direction. So no matter how much they butcher it, we win something. We win something. But I think and I know that I'm not going to do any more. And I wish I'd have done far fewer, because I always tell them, now, look, you coming to interview me? Yeah. You're not going to throw this in with all these other yahoos in the right wing? Oh, no, no. We just want to get it from you. And sure as hell, they lie. And they put me right in there with the yahoos, which, and then people send me emails and letters saying what an idiot I am because of something some right winger has said in the documentary that I didn't even know anything about. So you just can't win with those people. Well, let's hear what old Jimmy Hightower's got to say. He's one of my favorite populists. You'll never see him at a Klan rally, but as far as working people and against the fat cats, he's good. He's very good.
Progress. In the 2012 elections, Republicans cast themselves as budget balancers by promising to whack welfare programs for the poor, snarling that such people are takers and moochers. Such vindictive sourness didn't play too well with voters, and Republicans now seem to have learned their lesson. Oh, they're still going after food stamps, school lunches, etc., with a vengeance, but this time with a gentle, even loving tone. The GOP's official message massagers now have their members saying that they want to, quote, help the poor by eliminating those programs, referring to them as soulless giveaways that sap their initiative and tether them to the cold, uncaring hand of government. The message is, we're doing this for the poor people's own good. Their chief budgeteer, Representative Paul Ryan, trotted out this theme at a recent right-wing rally, condemning school lunches as unloving Obama fare plopped on plates by unsmiling cafeteria personnel. What they're offering people is a full stomach and an empty soul, he oozed. If that doesn't make you gag, try another subsidized lunch program that tender-hearted GOP budget whackers never mention, much less demand that it be eliminated. It's the tax subsidy for corporate meals, drinks, and entertainment. Multimillionaire CEOs can go wining and dining on your and my dime, writing off their high-dollar lunches, cocktails, dinners, and club hopping as a business expense. And expensive it is for us taxpayers. This subsidy adds up to more than $12 billion a year. And that doesn't count the human cost of executive initiative that is sapped by this giveaway, and the lack of love a CEO feels from being dependent on unsmiling taxpayers. This is Jim Hightower saying, we ought to be subsidizing healthy meals for poor people, especially school kids, but not a dime for fat cat CEOs dining out at Chez Gourmand.
And before some right-wing asshole congressman or senator tries to tell you, oh, that's all just black people draining that off, believe me, there's millions of white young people in these schools that need those meals also. You know, haven't they ever heard of all the people who are out of work and out of, you know, getting a check or anything? You know, but yet the Republican Party will try to, like, lead you to believe that, this is just because we want to eliminate it from the blacks. Yeah, bullshit. There's more whites on this than blacks, so tell them Republicans to go kiss your ass. Well, that one was pretty good. Let's listen to one more from Hightower. How about that?
The corporate powers that be keep thinking we'll stay hitched to their plow no matter how severely they lash us economically and kick us politically. But to borrow one of George W.'s convoluted phrases, they're badly misunderestimating America's workaday people. As the Occupy Wall Street movement demonstrated, and as shown by the ongoing actions of fast food workers and others who've been shunted into poverty wage jobs, we Americans are innately rebellious. In fact, from the Revolutionary Declaration of 1776 forward, rebellions are us. Shays' Rebellion in the 1780s, strikes by women mill workers in the early 1800s, the populist movement of the 1880s, and on into today's uprisings. We've never taken well to the moneyed powers grabbing more for themselves at our expense, and now they're grabbing more than ever. Wall Street elites, corporate profiteers, and inheritors of multi-billion dollar fortunes are trying to divert our attention from their oligarchic greed by spending lots of money on PR campaigns, front groups, and politicians to tell us that big government is our problem. I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. The ones knocking down the middle class and holding down the poor today are those same elites, profiteers, and heirs. The corporate media won't talk much about this reality, but a growing majority see it and is in a spreading rebellion against it, because after all, they're experiencing the abuse. This is Jim Hightower saying, the great anthem by rocker Patti Smith pretty well sums up where we Americans are and where I think we're going. People had the power to dream, to rule, to wrestle the world from fools. Ordinary folks are awakening to the realization that the fools have seized power. And the folks are now making moves and movements to seize the fools by their short hairs and reclaim our dreams.
Well, I think I'm going to put up another heading on the website for some of Hightower stuff. Call it Pissed Off Populist. What do you think about that? I think our people will like him. You another myth about you thinking the Republican Party thinks anything about white people. This minimum wage out here for fast food workers. Now, in the area where I'm at, 99% of the workers, fast food workers, are white. And these fat cat Republicans and elitists, they don't give a shit how little they're paid. They know they've got to know that they can't survive very well on that kind of money. And so I can't wait to see these young people start rebelling against these bastards and, you know, maybe pull them along off the street and whipping them up a little bit, you know. Oh, wow, that's violent. You gotta be violent, you Metzger. You're violent. Well, the time's coming when violence will have to be the order of the day to survive, period. But just make sure you get violent at the right people, not the working people. Dear Mr. Metzger, I read that you once worked for Senator Barry Goldwater. Did you ever meet him? No, I never met Barry Goldwater. He was at the very beginning of my political consciousness, before I was racial at all. I mean, you know, to a degree, I was not racial. And I didn't know anything about the Jews at the time. And that was way back in 63 or 64. But I will say this, that many of the things that he said I agreed with. Many of the things he said now I don't agree with. And after researching some of his background in the book The Green Felt Jungle and things like that, and his big connection with the military-industrial complex and things like that, that I wasn't really into the know back then, I probably would not have supported him now. But if you think that's bad, I was looking around for someone to support in that campaign, and I first went into the Republican office where they were supporting Nelson Rockefeller. Believe it or not, I was thinking about supporting Nelson Rockefeller. At least I got guided over to Barry Goldwater. But I will say this, that after that campaign, and I worked hard on that campaign, I wore out some shoes on that campaign, but I met a newspaper reporter from the Daily Breeze newspaper in South Bay in L.A., and he was a John Birch Society member. And so here's this reporter introduced me and invited me to a John Birch Society meeting, which in a way sort of led me in the right direction, at least got me on the ground floor. Something was going on. This fellow who emailed me said, I'm 26 years old. I've had an interest in American political process and in survival, expansion, and advancement of the Aryan race since I was 11 years of age. That's great. However, despite Goldwater having been half kike, I've always admired his stances back in the 60s. Am I a hypocrite? No, you're not a hypocrite any more than I was a hypocrite. I didn't know shit from Shinola back then. I was just beginning to learn. On a different note, do you happen to have any Race and Reason DVDs for sale? Okay, I'll tell him about that. So anyhow, yeah, we all started at the bottom of the pyramid and started climbing upstairs, and some of us would get to one level and then we'd decide that wasn't high enough and we'd climb up another level, and some of us stayed at the same level. That's the problem with most people. They get to one level and they are incapable of climbing up higher. And in wisdom and knowing what's going on, you've got to be willing to keep searching and climbing higher and higher and higher, because like I am such a totally different person than you could have compared me with back then. I mean, you know, I was such a neophyte. But at least I knew that Lyndon Johnson was a rat, because I read the book, A Texan Looks at Lyndon, by, trying to remember the man who wrote that book. I'll think of it 5 minutes after the show's over, but if you ever want to read about a corrupt rat, Lyndon Johnson. And he should have been in federal prison. He was involved in all kinds of bad things, including murder. So anyhow, at least I got that straight. And the one thing that jumped out at me in this investigation of the Kennedy assassination was this, and they've pretty much buried it, that in the Texas Book Depository there in Dallas, they found a fingerprint, a clear fingerprint that was a fingerprint of Lyndon Johnson's right-hand man, his strong-arm man, who had been involved in a murder down in Texas. Lyndon got him out of that, but that stuck in my mind. You don't hear hardly anybody talking about that, but one of the country's most foremost fingerprint experts absolutely declared that fingerprint on the windowsill at the Texas Depository was Lyndon Johnson's hitman. Makes you think, doesn't it? Now here's a conversation overheard on XM radio late one night. This is the black guy and the Latino. They know they're being used. They know the Republicans and the Democrats. It's all a bunch of bullshit. Everybody knows. Listen to this.
Going to vote for a party that's just playing ping pong with the other. Yeah. So, you know, it's we're at a really perilous place in terms of the apathy.
Especially because of the phrase, the Latino vote, has become so synonymous with just an idea of, we need you to win. We need you to win. We don't really care about what you want or what we can do.
We're going
to
do that for you, right.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, we can say that we brought out the Latino vote. So Democrats can say, oh yeah, you know, 70% of Latinos, we had the Latino vote. Republicans can say, well, we're working at getting the Latino vote. And so I think Latinos are becoming aware of that. They know that they're being used as a chess piece to make sure that if somebody's going to get elected, that they need this particular demographic to go out and vote for them. So it's just a matter of whether or not people are disillusioned by the entire thing, and if they're even, like you said, motivated enough to even head out to the polls.
Yeah, yeah.
This is MIP breaking news.
The LA. I mean, I'm even a political by trade. I just want to do a little math here.
Mm-hmm.
Are the number of deportations so high right now that at least every person here who's a Latino is maybe only two or three people removed? In other words, how close is it? I mean, does everyone know somebody, or does everyone know a family, or know a family that knows a family that has dealt with one of these abrupt deportations?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't know. I just know that for the past 5 years in which Obama's been in office, they say that it's approaching 2 million deportations.
Okay.
And at this moment, there are 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. I myself know a few undocumented immigrants. I don't know anybody who's been deported or who is in the process of getting deported. But that's not to say that there aren't families out there who are 6 degrees of...
Right. Well, maybe that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody probably knows somebody
mm-hmm.
who's undocumented.
Yeah.
Now, on this show, they go on, and I'm not going to run it on and on and on. They go on to talk about now that they're now a hell of a lot of illegal aliens are referring to themselves as white. They're discouraging them to say other and things like that. And more of these aliens are labeling themselves white, which again gives us a false picture of the actual numbers of true white European people in this country. So you got to remember that. So you got to subtract all these people. There's even blacks who call themselves white because the census people have to put down whatever they say. Well, let's close out the show here, like I said, with this Farrakhan and these guys all meeting to get the reparations from the white man. Well, you can get them if you start burning down their plants and burning down their office buildings and burning down their banks. That's how you got it the last time. It wasn't Martin Luther King that got it for you. It was Malcolm X. Yeah, here we go.
But as long as you're there, you got to be my man. Doing my will. Close with this. Jesus said, Reverend, no man can serve two masters. You will love one, or you will hate the other. You can't serve God and mammon too. Now, what Dr. Nettles put before us today is well thought out, and he didn't even touch all that his brilliant research and scholarship had. This man is a walking encyclopedia on what he's talking about, and there are many more with him. So look, all of us are not going there. Let's get that straight. We need unity. We sure do. We need unity with the people who want reparatory justice. We don't need unity with collaborators and pacifiers and people that want to talk it down when it should be talked up strong. We don't need that. And if I'm hurting your feeling, hell, your feeling needs to be hurt. Next time, don't bother me no more. If you don't want me to tell you the truth, then leave me the hell alone. Because when you call me, I'm going to tell it like it is or die trying. Jesus said, two will be laying in the bed. I don't think you can get no closer than that. I'm going to take one and leave one. Two will be grinding at the mill. It's going to take one and leave one. Then the Jesus speaking, he's a real revolutionary. He said, think not that I came to bring peace, nay, a sword. See, division is going to have to come over reparatory justice. Division before unity. Who wants it all over here? Especially when you find out what it is and the sacrifice it's going to have to make to get it. So I leave you. I pray that God will have the ancestors
proud of us. That we know their struggle, we know their pain, we know what they went through to give us what we got. And now we got to be accountable for our generation and leave our children and our grandchildren a future. And the future is reparatory justice. So let's revitalize the movement. And those that don't want to come along, because if there are two or three gathered together in his name, you're the majority. So let's go after it. And so, Dr. Ron Daniels, man, I love you and I thank you.
Well, that was at Chicago University, I think he said, back in the April. You think we could get in there? You didn't even hear the wildest part. I missed that. But I didn't miss it, but I didn't get it recorded. Farrakhan, he was really up to his... Mr. Farrakhan, Reverend Farrakhan, you got plenty of dough. You got big houses in Chicago, you got houses in California, you got houses in Arizona. I know about your houses. You got a slave plantation of your own that's made you rich. But that's okay. If you want that money, you want that money, we're going to give you permission to go after the ruling class. You get your bow-tied boys and go after that ruling class. We won't stand in your way, but when you get all done and you're dragging those bags of cash back home, you're going to see some hard hats out there going to say, wait a minute, let's figure this out here. Let's see who gets what and who gets how much. Maybe we split it evenly, or maybe we get two-thirds and you get a third. But don't think you're going to go after that ruling class and drag all that cash back into the ghetto. Without paying your taxes. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow. No, not tomorrow. Tomorrow's my day of rest. And it's Sunday. Be back with you on Moon's Day. And in the meantime, I just had one of our supporters tell us they had the police came to their front door and they did like was recommended. They didn't open the door or anything. And the cops left. They don't know why they came or not, but you see, that is the temptation you will have to open the door and try to find out what they want. And that is the method they use. That's one of their favorite methods, to get you to open the door and say hello and what's this all about, officer? Well, just you don't care what it's all about. Just don't let them in and don't talk to them or nothing. And most of the time they're going to go away. Okay, got it? Do it. Okay. 14:05. And shut up. Hey, let's go back there. I didn't do that right. Let's do it right. My way. The instrumental. Thank you.
Thank you.